everyone, Steve here. No jingle this week. As I sit down to record this, it is Tuesday the 5th of September, and I'm not long off the back of receiving the terrible news of the passing of an Irish wrestler known as Alexander Dean. I had the pleasure to work with Dean a few times for Mega Slam last year, and he was a tremendous performer who could hold the audience with literally his fingertip. I don't have a lot else to say. I considered him a friend. I didn't know him as well as others, but to those who knew him, it's a tremendous loss. He always had a smile on his face and always had a kind word for everyone. So, yeah, it's a big loss to those who knew him. So, Dean, thank you for everything you've done for me, all the kind words, and rest easy, my friend. My guest this week is Scott Bell. Now, for my money, Scott is one of the best referees in the country and someone who's always been super helpful to me and always taken the time to give me feedback when I've asked for it and even when I haven't, and that's super appreciated. We go into Scott's little shrine, which unfortunately you can't see. I'll try to see if I can get a screen grab of it, but it's a thing of beauty, and just how he got into the business, everything like that, and how he transitioned into being one of the Zebra Herd. Then, now when we get to the Room 101 segment, it may come off as us being quite negative, and that's not the intent. Basically, the art of refereeing is something that, as I'm sure you can imagine, myself and Scott are very passionate about. And so this is just kind of us setting our stall out about the lacking nature of how some perceive it and how the lack of care to detail of it that can further help or rather hinder the art of the referee and kind of lower the value of referees in the business. You know, and it's a very, 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 very select few. We're not pointing out anyone in particular or anything like that. It's not a negative. It's not a jab at anyone. It's just basically we understand why it happens, but you know, there's scope for change and everything like that, and treating it better, basically. As I say, it's not a negative. It's not there to be negative. I always wanted the Room 101 segment to be a bit tongue in cheek and a bit funny, but we do get a little bit into it on this one. But that, as I say, that's purely just because we're in that role and we take it quite seriously and we're passionate about it. So yeah, please don't take any offense from it or anything like that. It's not aimed at anyone. So yeah, that's all I'm going to say on that. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome to the show, referee Scott Bell. So Scott, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous, mate. All the better for seeing your lovely face.
Thank you.
Basically, mate, so we'll dive straight in if that's all good with you. So what's the most ridiculous thing you've seen in like the past week or past month in wrestling, be it on TV or you've been part of or anything like that?
Probably the most ridiculous thing I've been a part of was part of the TNT show recently, which is the deathmatch tournament.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even the most ridiculous thing on the card. What I was a part of, I was part of a segment with Gangrel, Gene Money, and Blue Kane.
Surreal.
It was like being transported back to WWF in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, aside from Gene Money being there, you had the Gangrel with Brood theme, Spitting the Blood, which was actually turned out to be Cherry Cider. and Blue Kane coming out, which was very, very, very surreal.
I don't want to kind of draw too much on this, but has he had a cease and desist?
I believe so, yeah. I don't know if he's had a cease and desist himself, but I think a certain company has had a cease and desist, so he's sort of like pulling it back a bit. Cause I think he's calling himself Blue Pain now.
Blue Pain, yeah. Fucking hell. Oh my God, because when I saw this character pop up, I was like, what? I thought we were past the kind of mock, like, mid-2000s kind of
Yeah.
pastiche shows, but at the same time, like, this is actually brilliant. Why has no one done this sooner?
Is pretty cool, like, to be fair, like, see it all happen in front of your eyes.
But man, that must have been fucking surreal to have been in there with Gangrel, man. Like, and just
Oh, mate.
see the full entrance. That even to this day, even if I'm just watching like whatever, just that opening, like the opening sound effect, the heavy breathing, everything like that, it gives me fucking goosebumps to this day, man.
Yeah, but the theme itself is one of my favorite themes in the whole of like the history of WWE. So to hear that in real life, like with him actually coming out, was just so fucking surreal.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was like one of out of body moments. Like, you know what I mean? I had it with Scott Too Hotty as well, and Rob Van Dam. Just like, am I actually here? Is this real sort of thing?
Yeah.
You see him walking towards, it's like, shit, how did I get here?
Man, that's fucking awesome. So what actually got you into wrestling in the first place? Like, both as a fan and then actually active in the business?
As a fan, it would be more from like the 2001 era. So I started watching it when it was on Channel 4, back in the day when it was free. And it's like right, sort of like WrestleMania 17 time in 2001. So really, WrestleMania 17, what sort of got me into it? Because I remember like watching Heat and then watching WrestleMania 17. Well, I taped WrestleMania 17 and just seeing all of that, like it instantly caught my attention. Because I think it was like one of the first ones, apart from like back in the day, where we brought it back to like a stadium type feel.
Yeah.
Because before then, it was like arenas, and then obviously you had WrestleMania 3, where it was at the Silverdome, wasn't it? With like 3,000 people. So I think it's like one of the first ones since then. It was like held in like a stadium type arena event sort of thing. So that all sort of was like sort of captivated me, like seeing all the thousands of people there and all the lights, the signs. It's like we don't make it like we used to with all the signs, and like you used to watch 2001 Raw, you see everyone in the crowd with a single sign, every
Yeah.
single person. Now it's just everyone with a phone. How times changed. But yeah, so I started watching wrestling from 2001 onwards. Went off a little bit in like maybe 08, 09, and sort of came back around again to it after that. But how I got into this myself was I started training at NGW, just based in Hull. Me and a friend who now wrestles under the name of Benjamin Quill, we both saw, went to an NGW show at Beverly, and we both saw a little leaflet which basically said, "Do you want to be a wrestler? Come to this place at so and so time every Wednesday, whatever." So we thought, yeah, fuck it, we'll go give it a go. At least if we've tried it, then we can say we've tried it. If we don't like it, it's fine. We can say we've tried it to everyone, or if we do like it, we'll carry on with it. So yeah, we went there back in 2017, 2016, and then since then we've just never stopped really. And then with like refereeing wise, I sort of got into that maybe like a year into training, maybe a year and a little bit. I sort of pulled my trainer aside, Matty Myers, and said, "Look, I really want to give refereeing a go. And it's something different. No one else is doing it. Everyone else was trained to be a wrestler. Obviously, I'm. It's no, no, no. It's no thingy to anyone. Like I'm only 5'4". So like the closest thing to a wrestler in my eyes is Rey Mysterio. So I was doing like 619s and shit. So I was like, I want to try something else. I can still be a part of it, and like I would say not take as many bumps, but as we both know, that's not the case. So yeah, I sort of like said, look, I want to try this. No one else around our area is doing it. No, we've got no referees around our area. We're having to bring referees from Newcastle, Manchester. So I said, look, I want to give this a go, and it just stuck with me. And then from then on, I sort of started watching referees more than actual wrestlers themselves. So yeah, I got my first gig through Matty Myers with BWR. And then from then on, it just sort of progressed and progressed. And as we're here now today, like, you know, it's how good it's got in the last 4, nearly 5 years. So.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, I'll have said it in the intro, but like, you are easily one of the hardest, if not the hardest working ref in the fucking biz. If you're
Thank
not working whole cards, you're bumping around for the
It could be a bad thing, to be fair, if certain people look at it that way, but I think fuck it, I'm there to have fun. You know what I mean?
Well, that's just it. That's just it. I mean, my only like, and I'm not gonna, this isn't a diss on you or anyone at all. Like, I think the only problem is, potentially, it creates like a weird expectation. It's like, oh, Scott's reffing some, he's gonna take a bump, kind of
That's
thing.
why, like, if someone comes to me about a bump, I'll always, it sounds stupid coming from me, but I always say to them, is it necessary? is there a way we can do it without this?
I'm exactly the same.
If I see it works for the match and it helps progress the match and the story, then I'll go 100% with it. As you've probably seen from the Carnival one with the drop kick.
Yeah.
Went hellful ever.
Dorito right, went right through you.
I was worried he was going to go right over me.
It's like, because I did a show quite recently and match, like I was just kind of getting changed and I'd introduced myself. And I was like, if you need anything, guys, just come talk to me about your matches, whatever, cool. Mm. And I overheard a couple of guys who were in match two talk about a ref bump. I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, I was doing the whole card solo. I'm like, I'm not taking a bump in match two.
Yeah.
And then basically the way I tried to talk them out of it was not that they needed talking, not that they should have needed talking out of it, because I was like, look, the promoter hasn't cleared this with me.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, they haven't cleared it with you either. Yeah. And but basically I kind of stroked the ego a little bit. I just kind of said, oh yeah, but then if I'm working the whole card still and I'm fresh as a daisy, it undersells you and all this stuff. And they're like, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, good point. I was like, there you go, kiddo.
This is the thing, isn't it? I don't think some certain wrestlers realize like that sort of thing behind it. Like I've done so many cards and I've been in the same position as you where they wanted me to bump in match two or three and it's still another match after that. Oh, I wanted to bump in match four and then the main event I wanted to bump. I'm like, just save the bump for main event. That's where it builds up. And I just don't get that sort of psychology behind it. Do we just think, oh, we need a distraction to cheat. So we'll bump the ref out of the way. And that's where we come in, where we're like, you can cheat by doing this and me not seeing it. And
yeah.
It helps you. It still gets you heat, still gets you shit, but it protects me as a referee.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't take that into account these days of, oh, we need to protect referee, do it, especially in tag matches. My God. Tag matches. When it's done beautifully, it is absolutely fantastic to work a tag match. But if people don't have that psychology of tag in, tag out, I've only got 5 seconds, theoretically, it's worse when it's two singles wrestlers that have been put together because we don't get that psychology. Unless you're in someone like Risa and Rogan or like the Young Guns when they were together who get tag team wrestling, then you're in for a fucking shift.
Yeah.
Basically, aren't you? Because we just don't give a shit about referee. And it makes you look like an absolute mug. And that's one thing that's really grabs my gears about like wrestling, when just people don't take us into account.
Yeah.
And I think people need to sort of like realise that more and realise we're there to help them, not to hinder them. And the same with us, like we're a worker as well. You know, if we want to send our work to somewhere else and we're taking a bump in match two or whatever and you send it to WWE or whatever, and we're going to look at it and think, well, why are you taking a bump in match two? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, that this is all a big old conversation for another day. when we get together and finally work together again, and we can sit and moan in our own time.
Like, so, too old.
so I, years ago, when someone who doesn't work anymore, we'd always get together backstage and we had what was called Grumpy Corner.
Yeah.
It was just us two old buggers just sat in the corner just moaning about everything. But it was all in good spirits, so it's like we were just moaning for the sake of moaning, but it was never...
You need a good moan from time to time, though, don't you?
It was never out of malice or anything like that.
Yeah.
We're just doing it to pop ourselves a little bit. So to keep this rolling on, so what is your absolute favorite ridiculous thing in pro wrestling?
Absolute favorite, like match wise or
anything, your favorite gimmick, storyline, anything like that? It's just been so off the walls, but like it's maybe even it's so bad it's good.
My favorite, right, if we're going match wise, it's not for the fact that it's like it's totally out there, it's just the fact that it was just so funny to me when I first watched it, and that sort of like got me into it. From WrestleMania 17, it's a hardcore triple threat match with Raven, Big Show, and Kane. And it's the first time I've seen someone like that, like where it's all over the arena. And the fact that Kane, this guy, massive jack guy with a mask on, was driving a golf cart around backstage.
Yes!
And it just captivated me. So the referee on the back. It just captivated me. And then he almost runs over Raven. It's funny as fuck. but it had so much in that match. And I think that's where I sort of fell in love with hardcore wrestling, if I'm honest. Yeah. I used to have a hardcore WWF hardcore video where a compilation of all the fucking hardcore video hardcore matches for like maybe like 1997 onwards to like 2000, 2001. And was that some cracking matches on there. So what was that?
Was that the one with the white cover that just had the hardcore title?
Yes,
with yes!
On it. Yeah. It had Taz who was presenting it all.
Yeah.
And they had like the women's hardcore matches where I think it was like Ivy and Tori. Where like Ivy like burned Tori's back with an iron and all this. I'm like, is that real? Is that legal? And then I'll always remember the match with Hardcore Holly and Al Snow, where we went into a Mississippi River.
Yes.
Who would be out there fighting? And, oh, look at this! Into the Mississippi River! That water has got to be 35, 40 degrees! And now Al Snow tossed in!
But yeah, that match from WrestleMania 17 was just so out there for me in my own little way. I just fucking loved it. Every little element to it. It was like you had Raven going for a window, Kane and Big Show going for a wall, and then Kane on a fucking golf cart.
It's got it all.
What more could you want?
I mean, one of my favorite stories about that, I don't know how much is true and how much is embellished, but Raven apparently nearly cut the feed to the entire show.
Yeah, I've heard that. Because when he first got in the golf cart and it went off the edge.
Yeah.
It almost caught the power of the air, power for the whole show.
God
almighty.
Would have
been interesting, but
he would have been fired second. They wouldn't have waited until morning. They'd have given his marching
orders. Mac would have been happy.
No. Oh God. So I mean, you mentioned like Gangrel earlier, like being part of that. I mean, that as a kind of surreal moment, but like, what is, aside from that, what is the most ridiculous thing that you have been part of?
There's been so many, for good and bad reasons, really. Just some really awful matches, like when the first start of my career. Like, the first match I did was a tag match, and it had Matty Myers in it as Chuck Wood, a guy called Jack Wellington, which you might know from like the Mega Slam side of things, and it had Harry the Hammer and Simon Lancaster, and he did a low blow right in front of me during a tag match, and Matty looked at me and just said, what the fuck are we doing? I was like, what do I do? So I just carried on with it, but that was an interesting one. I just think I've been a part of. I liked, we did a spot at Progress with Gene Money and Maggot where I got bumped early on in the match. Surprise. So Gene Money crushed me in the corner inadvertently. I roll to the outside. I wait a little bit, get up on the apron. I get bumped again to the outside. LK then comes down. She gets a poke to the eye, so she's distracted with that. One of them gets Gene Money's belt. They're going backwards and forwards with the belt, doing the Eddie Guerrero spot, and then they both throw the belt to LK. LK catches it, they both take a bump. I then come to and then see LK in the ring with a belt, and I'm like, motherfucker, did you just take these two guys out of the belt? And the crowd absolutely fucking loved it. It's on my TikTok somewhere, but you can just like out, 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 shouting that. And then like I put a belt down, I do a whole, you know, whoa, and you can hear the crowd come along with me. I'm like, you're out of here. It was just so, like, not bizarre, but it was so, like, funny to be a part of that. It got criticised by a fair few people, but I was like, fuck it. I had fun with it. A lot of people at Pro Wrestling loved it. And it helped that match because it was a comedy match as well. You know what I mean?
That's it. It's so easy for stuff like that to be taken out of context.
Yeah.
Like, because... like, yeah, because so much of wrestling now exists in just TikTok and GIFs and things like that. It's so easy for something like that to be seen out of context without like its full explanation and everything like that.
Yeah,
like, I mean, when I first saw that clip, I was honestly I fell out of my chair. I fell out of my chair with laughter because I was like, this, because we see the Eddie Guerrero spot all the time now.
Yeah.
So it's nice that, yeah, whoever crafted that, I am going to assume Gene, kind of like can just put a fresh spin on it, just put a fresh coat of paint on it. And it just, and yeah, and again, for the full context of the match, Mm-hmm. Especially, yeah, and if you're in a G-Money match, you know what you're going to expect. There's going to be some sort of ridiculous shenanigan that's just going to be, like, for, it, let's be honest with ourselves, it's for himself more than anything.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that sometimes. Like, so, yeah, when I saw that, I just died. I couldn't stop laughing for about 10 minutes. I was just, because it was just so chef's kiss perfect.
Yeah.
the timing and everything, like...
Oh. Everything works so well with that. I was so happy with it. But like the funny thing is with that is like maybe like 3 weeks after that got posted online on NXT UK, like we did an Eddie Guerrero spot, and I was like, I wonder how much of that is like we've seen that there. We can maybe incorporate this here.
Mm.
I think NXT UK or it could be some NXT 2.0 when that was just starting up. I think it was a pretty deadly match, maybe, and it was like Eddie Guerrero spot. Copy.
Oh, God, love them boys. So, what is if such a thing exists as a guilty pleasure in wrestling? Because let's face it, when we get down to it, and that's the whole point of this podcast, when you get down to it, it's all a little bit daft. So, if there is such a thing as a guilty pleasure or a wrestling comfort food, what is Scott Bell's?
I like watching Eddie Guerrero spots. There's a compilation on Twitter somewhere, I can't think where it is, but it's like every Eddie Guerrero spot that he's ever done. And you can see it evolving from time to time. And just the fact, he just has these great facials as Eddie Guerrero. If you watch all the stuff back, it's just absolutely fantastic to watch. So that's one of them. I like going back and watching like old 01 pay-per-views, because that's what I grew up on, is 2001 pay-per-views. Wrestling comfort food. I just like the part of wrestling as well. I really enjoy, and probably the most, and this probably goes for most people, is the car journeys.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself comforts me in a way. Like, I live for the car journeys rather than the show sometimes, like just for chats with the lads and whatnot. And just getting to hang around backstage with people who you don't necessarily get to hang around with, and you get to, you know, become friends with people you wouldn't necessarily thought you'd become great friends with. Like, this. So many people that when I first started, I was quite dubious of. But now I'm actually really, really good friends with certain people, which is really good to like connect with people. Like, I'm really good friends like Liz Eva, Rhea, people like that. But yeah, that's like, it's like my comfort. Like I said, I just watch like old 01 pay per views, hardcore matches here and there because I love hardcore wrestling. that's about it, really. I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, man.
I like watching Botchamania as well.
Yeah.
I was like, unless I'm on it, which I've been on like twice, I like watching Botchamania. I like watching wrestling videos on like YouTube of like OMG moments as well. That's like a weird like comfort thing of mine. Yeah. But yeah, apart from that, that's about it really.
Yeah, I mean, like 01, like 2000, 2001. So basically 2000, 2002 for me is like this wonderful fucking sweet spot. Because there's this like kind of thing of, well, the Attitude Era is kind of over. WCW's gone. We're trying to find a new identity for ourselves. So everyone's like trying to carve their own little niche. And there's so much hard work going on in the ring. Like, everyone gives the invasion a bad rap for, you know, the way it was just basically like, well, WWF's obviously going to win kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like they forget that a lot of the actual in-ring product was so good. Like, I mean, I always say it like, I mean, as far as comfort foods go, like one of my favorite matches of all time is from that era. It's just from a random Raw. It was X-Pac versus Tajiri. Curtain to curtain, it is 5 minutes. Bang on. 5 minutes. And they get all their shit in. They tell a story that everything is done. There's a Bronco Buster. There's the handspring elbow. There's the mist. There's the bit. There's the kicks. Like you get it all in that match, and it's like entrances and exits. It's five minutes on the nose. It is perfect.
Mm.
Like, and then like, I mean, I can gush about X-Pac all fucking day long. But like, I think it's on Invasion itself. It's like X-Pac versus Kidman.
Yeah.
Like, again, great match. Like there's a six-man tag on Invasion that has no right to be as good as it is. It's Big Show, Billy Gunn, and Albert against, I want to say it's Canyon, Hugh Morris, and I forget who the odd one out is on that one. But again, it's just fun. It's just a good fun let me up six-man tag in the middle of the show. And it's so good. And also, that show has the greatest match of all time in Earl Hebner versus Nick Patrick.
Oh, I love the Invasion. Like, one of my favorite matches is from Survivor Series 2001, the winner take all match.
Yes.
because it was just so fucking good. And like the run up to that was so fantastic. It was a, I think it was an ending to SmackDown where you have like a finisher, 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 finisher. There's everyone from that team, both teams running out hitting finishes on each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was boom, 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 boom. Like we don't make it like that anymore. Like,
no.
But like it was just shit. Like that was fucking class.
And like in that match as well, they like really put over Big Show as well. Cause like, like Booker T hits the axe kick, Shane hits the elbow, and then RVD hits the frog splash to like eliminate him. Like, cause that was the only way they were going to eliminate him. It was just like a finisher spam. It, like really good stuff. Like, man.
Yeah.
I could gush about that again. I could gush about that kind of time frame. And I mean, like when you go to 02 as well, like you get the SmackDown 6 and all that lot, like, you know, just fucking great fucking time in the business. Yeah. Man. Fantastic stuff. And also Charles Robinson came to WWE.
We're forever grateful for that. I am anyway.
I am. You must have seen it. If anyone else has seen it in this world, it must be you. Some random dark match during the invasion. Charles Robinson, for no reason, does a cartwheel.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I'll send you it as soon as we're off. Oh my God. It's just on some dark match. Clearly someone's getting a tryout. Like there's barely any fucker in the building. Hits the finish. In fact, he does a crossroads as a finish, I'm pretty sure, the guy. And then Charles Robinson literally just cartwheels into frame right down for the count. It's perfect. It's just, oh my God.
A video recently of Charles Robinson taking a bump and he gets punched by Dom Mysterio. And he just fucking flies up the ring, like through the bottom middle of the rope. Fantastic.
I adore it. Oh, my God.
But speaking of cartwheels, there's a lad called Chris Tyler Wood, who used to work like Future Shock and that. He's moved like to Canada or wherever he is. And he did for a lot of wrestling, not one just gone, but the year before that, Liverpool. And he was refereeing a match and Billy Gunn and Road Dogg got on the comms to him and said to him, do a cartwheel. So he did a cartwheel.
Legend.
If you're going to do a cartwheel, you've got to do one for Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, haven't you?
Oh, mate, you got it. So with that, we're going to take a little trip to Room 101. So with this, you get to cast anything you want into the Forbidden Zone, never to be seen again. And you also get to preserve one thing as well. So what are you going to destroy and erase from wrestling history?
Oh, from wrestling history, it's an ongoing problem for me, is unprofessional referees. Like, it is my absolute fucking bugbear to see a referee in like tracky bottoms, shirt untucked, trainers, knee pads on the outside of the said tracky bottoms. Just looks so unprofessional. And I could go on about this all fucking day, man. Like, if you're a promoter and you see that as your referee, like, you shouldn't be running shows, in my opinion. You don't want to be running... They don't want to be running professional shows if they're okay with seeing that. Because it doesn't take much to get, you know, a pair of black trousers or, you know, a proper decent referee shirt and just a pair of black trainers. That's all you really need. And knee pads. Oh, just like... Just seeing that just makes me die a little inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've ranted about this so many times. Like, yeah. It's now almost like if there was it, you know, like Woody Dolls where it's like you pull string and there's like so if I had one of mine would be untuck, don't give a fuck.
That's brilliant. Oh. But just to see, like you can just tell that some people have just thrown a shirt on. And just said, oh, count to three. And that's not what it's about. There's so much more. You know, there's so much more to it than just being able to count to three. Well, count to ten in some cases. But, you know, it's just so unprofessional seeing that sort of thing. And it's unsafe as well, in my opinion. If I haven't got someone who's training any certain way and is doing that, it's unsafe for the performers in the ring as well.
Absolutely. I mean,
big bugbear.
Yeah, I mean, like clearly someone's just turned up. They've real, and that's the bit that gets me is when you can tell that a lad's literally been given a shirt because the promoter's actually forgotten to book a referee.
Yeah,
they're the ones you can point at. You can find. You can spot a mile away.
Oh God, yeah.
And generally, it's a trainee who has no interest in being a referee, doesn't care about referees. You probably hasn't trained with a referee.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. Like, I won't say who, but basically someone once sent me a match they were quite proud of and actually, you know, God love them, asked me for feedback on it.
Mm.
And they sent me the link and I turned it off after 45 seconds.
Mm.
And I was like, mate, I can't watch it. He's like, why? I was like, go watch it and see see if you see what I see. He's like, I don't get it. I go, look at your man in stripes.
Mm.
He's like, oh, fucking hell. Like, he came back to me and apologized to me on his behalf. Because like, basically he was leant in the corner, hands in pockets. I was God, no. But again, I could tell he was someone that just got given a shirt on the day.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
That's nothing. Like you'll find, like, seeing like photos of me, like, I always react to certain things, how you'd react in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You get some referees who just sort of just stand there and are emotionless. And for me, that adds nothing to that match. You know, these people are working their ass off in the ring, and you can't even bring out emotion to help progress that match and elevate that match, that intensity of that match. And you just stood there like fucking Medusa's come over you and fucking turned to stone, you know what I mean? But just stuff like that, man, it's just... And, like, it helps for me, like, having referees who are, you know, first aid training somewhere, shape, form. Because, like, you can probably go to some shows and, like you say, the people who just bring people off the streets probably don't have a paramedic on site either, or a, you know, health and safety. Just anyone, like, you know, like, first aid. So it helps us been first aid training in a way. Like, I had a show a week with Pilot Hudson, had a cut on her head. I was straight in there, patching it up, sawing it out. If that was anyone else off the street, I wouldn't have a fucking clue what to do with it. You know what I mean? So it's for their safety as well, which is just...
Absolutely.
I could go on and on about it, Steve.
So let's kind of let's spin it round then. So what is something you want to preserve for eternity?
Oh, God, for eternity. Oh, could it be a person?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, you can see this, but no, that's probably kind of... like, I preserve The Undertaker from 2001. The American Badass, rolling as his theme, just absolutely fucking immense. Just some really great matches from that period for me, watching him. And that's how I sort of became to like him. And Kane as well, to be fair. Just like that whole Brothers of Destruction from 01, where Kane was jacked as fuck as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just preserve them two from that period and let them never get old. Just keep them at that age. so we'll never go on to have shit matches like a Crown Jewel. You know, I want to remember them like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd preserve them two from that era for me.
I'd agree wholeheartedly. I think people unfairly and unnecessarily shit on American Badass era.
Mm.
And because it wasn't what they used to, and he wasn't like fucking like shooting lightning bolts or whatever. Like,
yeah.
And because that era wasn't about that stuff anymore. We were wanting a bit more reality and things like that. And Taker saw that. I was like, well, I'll just be, you know, I think he described it as like in like biker gangs, people get call signs and nicknames and stuff like that. It's like, what if mine was just, I was called Undertaker? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, that was his rationale for it, and it makes perfect sense to me, like, when it's described like that. And because he sped up his style, completely changed his style, like, because his knees and his hips were fucked, so he wasn't doing the tombstone, he was, and things like that, so it was protecting himself, and in a weird way, like, protecting the guys he was in there with a bit more.
Because, yeah, definitely.
And like, Sticks Forever goes on about this. Tag matches, holy shit. The Undertaker in that era is the guy to watch for being the baby on the apron. Holy shit. He was, he must have seen that clip from, again, I think it's from a Random House show, but it's like pacing up and down the fucking apron. Like, he grabs a bottle of water and fucking like going absolutely ape shit. And then like finally gets a tag and just bam, bam, bam. Like, oh my God. Tremendous.
Have you seen, thanks from Unforgiven 2001, or maybe No Mercy, it's one of them two, where it's Undertaker and Kane versus Chronic.
Oh, God, that match is rough, but...
It's rotten, but you can see how hard Taker's trying to drag them through it, and you can actually hear him call stuff to him as well. So, like, it's just... like, and for that, like, I think one of the guys at Chronic, like, both of them, like, both his, like, best mates or something of the time work.
Yeah, Taker was really trying to get him through it because he went to bat for them.
Yeah, yeah. but like just see, you can see him like try and actually fucking try and pull it together and pull them through a match, which you can, I used to say when you watch it, it's fucking rough, but.
But it's like, and again, like, you know, and I mean, for me anyway, like up until then, Taker was, it was only every so often he would have like that killer fucking match. But then from then, he really hit his stride. Like 2000, fully loaded 2000, the match with Kurt Angle, absolutely tremendous. Then like going into 2001, like, yeah, there were kind of squashes, but even some of the matches, like when they got a bit competitive with DDP, were actually decent. Like the cage match from SummerSlam, I think, is underrated.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You know? Like, and even like, his matches when him and Kane against Triple H and Stone Cold.
Yeah.
And the whole singles thing with Triple H and Undertaker and that was fucking class.
Yeah. So I agree. I will preserve Undertaker, American Badass era, because he does not get the love he deserves. Yeah. And I mean, fucking hell, anyone who has to put up with Nathan Jones, I mean, come on. I love that. I mean, I don't know how true the story is, but going to Mania 19, I've seen the raw footage. When I say raw footage, I mean like the unedited footage from the SmackDown when Nathan Jones was supposed to save Undertaker and he fell on his fucking ass.
Yeah.
And they go for the reshoot. You can tell that's when Taker went right to him and said, absolutely not. Not on my WrestleMania. So he just goes it alone against Big Show and A-Train. And that match is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
I keep gushing. I'm sorry. Because, again, Undertaker was the reason I got into wrestling in the first place. Yeah. So, you know, SummerSlam 2002, match against Test. So good. Sorry, SummerSlam 2002 is actually one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time in general.
Yeah.
Like top to bottom, that card's tremendous. Mm-hmm. And again, like Taker and Test just in the middle of the card, you wouldn't think anything of that match because, again, Test very underrated in my opinion. But they go out there and they fucking have just a big boy slugfest and it's great.
And then didn't Christian Lance Storm get absolutely murked by Undertaker at the end of that match as well? Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And even his heel run at the end of like 01, start of 02, again, I don't think gets the love it deserves. Like that heel turn at the end of 01 still gives me goosebumps to this day.
Yeah.
Like when he gets JR and he's just like,
oh, yeah.
And he's like, is that because you're better than me? And JR's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I remember watching that on Raw because I used to tape Raw on a Monday night and then watch it the next day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, motherfucker. Like, I felt like part of me is like, gone. I was like, why turn him heel?
Felt betrayed,
but it worked so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole thing with David Flair as well.
Yeah.
Like, that bit with him trying to get Ric Flair to wrestle in WrestleMania. Yeah. Even that was a fucking banger of a match.
Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair is Undertaker. Absolutely amazing.
Like, and again, like, Taker was my guy, but like when Arn Anderson came and gave him the fucking spine buster, I was like, oh fuck, like, and then that all builds to the ladder match with Jeff as well and stuff like that. Just great run of fucking, and then my favorite triple threat of all time, a Rock and Kurt when they steal each other's finishes, like, oh god, just great run. Yes, yeah. Sorry, Undertaker preserved for eternity, any era, any time, any place, anywhere.
Yeah. Definitely.
Just Undertaker as a whole, like, my god. Scott, it's been an absolute fucking joy chatting with you and catching up with you outside of a show environment. Take this time now to plug anything and everything you want, all your socials, anything like that.
My main socials, Twitter these days, and you can catch me on Instagram as well. Instagram and Twitter, both same handles, at RefSGB93, and that's where you can find me and keep up to date with my shows and all my bumps. If you like that sort of thing. So yeah, Twitter mainly. At RefSGB93 is my handle.
Fabulous. Scott, thank you so much for coming on Being Utterly Ridiculous with me.
No, man, thank you for having me.
Once again, a massive thank you to Scott for jumping on the podcast and talking all things refereeing and all things ridiculous with me. Make sure you go see Scott wherever he is. He's pretty much on damn near every show all over the country, so you can't miss him. He's a wonderful, wonderful human being, as I'm sure you've gathered from listening to that. So here's where you can find me in the upcoming weeks. So for House of Pain Wrestling, I will be in Kirkhallam Friday the 15th, Sawley on Saturday the 16th, Cotgrave Friday the 22nd and St Anne's on Saturday the 23rd. For those shows for House of Pain, just contact Styx and he will sort you out with seating reservations, or also the House of Pain Facebook page, and yeah, they'll sort you out. Then on Sunday the 24th, you can find me at Elevation Wrestling, where they are debuting a new venue in Colville. So just go onto the Elevation Facebook page, follow the links for tickets to that one. And yeah, so that's a new venue for them after a slight issue that we had with New Bold Verdon. Hopefully that's not the last time we're there, because I really love that venue. But let's see, and let's pack the place out in Colville, yeah? So after that, basically, it's all go in the month of October. I'm here, there, and everywhere, from shows I'm actually going to be on to shows I'm just going to go check out. Very much looking forward to going to see Impact on Sunday the 29th of October. So if you're there in Coventry, just give us a wave and come say hello. And with all that being said, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at Steve Dean Refs. You can find me on Facebook, Steve Dean Pro Wrestling Referee. And in 2 weeks' time, we have a very, very special guest from the USA. He was over in the UK earlier this year for Kumite and a couple of other shows. But I have Stiff Robo Ginger himself, Gary J., talking all things ridiculous with me. So until then, folks, let's keep wrestling ridiculous and take care.